shit.
Got a paper towel. Luckily.
Didn't get on anything, like, irreplaceable.
Future Adam, be sure to edit this out so no one knows about your foible. Your faux pas. My washcloths don't have turtles on them.
You roll in style.
God, God damn it. Now I don't feel nearly as bad.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Damn Art Majors. Thank you for joining us. This is episode 34. We are sans Richard this time around. So it's just me, your host, Aaron Early, and...
Adam.
Last name?
Dudley.
Wrong, it's Bond.
Oh. Yeah, we're down Dudders. He is held up at work. He's been quite busy working on some sculpture-y stuff. And did you see the photo he posted? He had like this giant sphere shape sitting in the back of his pickup that I guess will ultimately become a giant globe.
No, I haven't seen that. Is it on Instagram or something?
It's on the Instagrams. Oh. And you can now follow him on the Instagrams. But yeah, let's do this the way we always do this with another rousing edition of What You Drinking. What do you got?
Right now I'm drinking a People's Porter by Foothills Brewing. I think Foothills is that in Winston-Salem? Yeah. I've been there. What the fuck am I talking about? I've been there. It's excellent. It's good. Check it out.
I am drinking a New Belgium Ranger. This is an IPA. I guess it's kind of their standard IPA, not to be confused with their fall IPA.
Beer I'm about to switch to is a Wide Open Red, which is a draft ale.
I think you had that as the what you drinking last week.
Did I?
Yep.
I forgot because I had to run out of there. Like I had
you had to leave us a little early.
Yeah, I had to go pick up my girlfriend from the bus station because she got out of prison.
It's like Orange is the New Black situation.
Yep.
You're totally the Jason Biggs of this situation, aren't you?
She cheated on me with, what's her name, Dana from...
Donna?
Donna from that 70s show.
Dana? There is no Dana, only Zool.
No, no.
So, got any plugs before I get into some of the Damn Art Major news? Because there, yes, is in fact Damn Art Major news.
I don't know. The only plug I have is I'm in talks with a local art community about getting a studio space and possibly doing some teaching. But we'll see how that goes in the next 2 weeks before I announce anything.
Right on. Things are in the works. So, speaking of things in the works, we are also discussing setting up doing the first ever live recording of Damn Art Majors in front of a live audience. That'll be a couple months down the road, probably after Christmas, maybe early on into the new year. I believe we are discussing probably taking a brief hiatus around December. We're going to do our Christmas show in December and then kind of sign off for a week or two. Not a long period. You guys won't miss us that bad. And then come back in the new year with some new games, new guests, new segments.
And, new reasons to feel guilty.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You got the Christmas episode to look forward to and you got the live episode to look forward to in the new year. But before that, starting this week... This week, Aaron, this is going to be a new contest that is going to last.
Last week?
No, this week.
Last week?
Well, I mean, technically last week, but you're not going to hear this until Monday, so this week?
Do you count Sunday as this week?
Well, this is going to air on Monday, so this week?
Okay.
View 11.
This week.
Yep, this week. Starting this week. We are starting a new contest. A couple months ago, we came out with a sticker with the logo on it. Aaron came up with the witty tagline, "The next sticker will be better," which, as you know, is a take on our sign-off. And
that was Richard's idea.
Was it?
Yeah, he texted it to me, and I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, that's right. You just designed the sticker.
Yeah.
Well, With that being said, we're going to make the next sticker better, because we're going to let you, the audience, design the sticker.
Yeah, we're going the crowdsourcing route.
Kind of. It's the next sticker will be better contest. So, how does this work, you're wondering? We will be accepting submissions all through the month of November up until December 1st. We will then have judges, including ourselves, but not only us, pick the best design. The winner will not only have the sticker printed and mailed to them, but they will also receive an Oak City Hustle t-shirt, a custom illustration from the Damn Art Majors, which, by the way, Bryce received his in the mail and said it was awesome. He got the Billy Stration, if you will.
The triad Billy Zane drawing?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, the winner would have another custom-made illustration by the three of us coming to them. The winner will be announced during the Christmas episode, right before the hiatus. And so to let you know, the dimensions that we need are 2x2 inches at 300 DPI. It can be sent to us in a JPEG form, a PDF, or my personal favorite, the PNG.
Or if you actually know what you're doing with Photoshop, .tiff would be a really good format.
Or EPS.
That's Illustrator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to do it in Illustrator, why can't you do it in Illustrator? You can do it in Illustrator.
You could.
You can do it physically, scan it in, scale it down to the dimensions.
You can do it in fucking Microsoft Paint as long as it's 300 DPI.
And then just email it to us at the email, which is, of course, damnartmajors@gmail.com. You have more than a month to come up with something. If you guys want, stop by damnartmajors.com to drag and drop a copy of the logo, and maybe we'll throw up the image of the damn dog so you can incorporate that if you wanted to.
I'll tell you what, I should upload a
downloadable
template.
Yeah,
I should just upload a template.
Okay, well, by the time this airs, we probably have figured out something, and you guys could download it and then design your sticker and post it to us. And every sticker that we receive, we will post on the Facebook, the Twitter, and damnartmajors.com with your name on it. So think of it as a way of self-promotion as well. Even if you don't win, you still get your name and your art seen. Come
Indeed.
On. What do you got to lose?
We put these things up all over the place.
Hand them out at conventions.
I'm partial to putting them in public restrooms.
Exactly. For the masses. Yep. So, the next sticker will be better contest starting now.
Next week, this week.
Yep.
Additionally, we had a guest on recently by the name of Brandon Cordry, who is a local illustrator, painter, and drawer, and art aficionado, I should say. During that discussion, we mentioned briefly about possibly meeting up at Visual Arts Exchange, not the Visual Arts Exchange, to possibly record an episode of Damn Art Majors live from their facility. You know, we'd probably walk around and interview artists individually, you know, ask them.
I was thinking it'd be more of a Q&A thing.
Oh, you mean like we
like a panel discussion, I would think.
Oh, well, shit, that could work as well.
That's kind of how I envisioned it.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll go with your vision. Yeah. But that's coming up pretty soon. I think it would be pretty interesting. We could, you know, formulate all sorts of hard-hitting questions.
If you check the email, like, Brandon and I had a back and forth about maybe, like, around January 20th, kind of.
He sent me, like, 7 emails this week.
This one was in the Damn Art Majors email. I didn't send it. Brandon sent it.
Okay.
Check the email.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
There you go. But you're right, I did send you a lot of emails because I feel all rejuvenated and interested. One of those emails I sent you today was about something happening in New Orleans. It is being considered a live installation piece, if you will. It is a gun buyback program that happened Saturday.
Do you want me to pull this up on the computer?
No, I got it.
Okay.
Called the Embassy. They entitled the gun buyback program the embassy, like you would title an installation piece. It is being, it was created by an artist and curator. I'm going to butcher this name. Bear with me. Krusha Kirsha? Kirsha?
I'll say Krusha Kaishel.
Sounds good to me. After witnessing a violent crime inspired her to do this project, she got together with the Tasmania Museum of Old and New Art, got together with local artists, rappers, and reverends to make it a community event. They were paying people as little as $75 and as much as $250 per gun, depending on, I guess, like the style of gun. Like a semi-automatic or a fully automatic would get around $250. A pistol would get around $775. But it's a huge event. They said it was going to be the largest gun buyback program for New Orleans. And it was just kind of an interesting event. Something kind of colorful, fun, lighthearted to come out of the wake of such violence in the streets. How'd you pronounce your name?
I'm just guessing it's Krusha Kaishel.
Krusha goes on to say it's an art installation set in the world. Rather than being static, it's dynamic, it's alive. She says there's no specific plans for the guns at this point in time. The art is the act of buying the guns. It's a ritual, a performance piece. We are also engaging a Berkeley economist to model the buyback and its effect. We hope we can get some meaningful data about gun buyback and whether or not they work, because really there hasn't been a good analysis thus far, she says. So, I just found it kind of interesting. I wouldn't necessarily call it an artistic installation so much as I would call it an art and nonviolent outreach program. Aaron, how do you feel about it?
I don't know. I have not had the chance to look into it online. This is all that I've read of it is what you've mentioned and what you just read. I don't know that I could call it a performance piece. I would imagine it would be different if I was there in person witnessing people sure. buying guns. I mean, I would imagine it goes like this. There's a table, there's security, there's a line of people holding guns that are probably tagged so that, you know, they're slated for destruction. I'm sure there's somebody that's checking them for ammunition being loaded into the chambers and all this. I really don't think you could hand over a gun without it being checked.
According to the article, they said it was kind of a no questions asked policy with this. Just the important thing was to get them off the streets.
That's there's no way. Because people could be handing over murder weapons and shit.
Maybe.
Like that would be best way to get away with throwing a murder weapon away.
Well, see, I'm not debating whether or not this is a positive thing for the community. That's obviously the case. Very positive. It's colorful. It's fun. And, you know, you get guns off the street. Who's to complain? Except maybe the NRA. I guess if anything, I'm more questioning whether or not you can consider it an art installation. She says that the art, and I'm quoting here, the art is the act of buying the guns. I disagree. I would think the art is the giving up of the guns, not the buying of them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you're doing something that you want to do. You're receiving the guns and giving people money. They're having to make the conscious effort to part with their peace.
Yeah, you're giving over, you're handing over your legal protection that is given to you via the laws that found America. I could see that as being a aspect of this, an artful aspect of this, but the visual element of it, I think, suffers terribly, and it devalues it entirely to me, without there being something additional to the whole thing. Like, there's got to be something done with the guns, in my opinion.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's and that's when I read this, that's kind of what bummed me out the most, was that they said there was no specific plans for the guns at this point in time. I'd like to see a really awesome tribute sculpture to ending gun violence.
Mm-hmm. Even just a spread of the guns laid out in whatever format. They could be piled in a freaking mound for all I care. Take a photograph of it. You know, that hits on all sorts of traditional artist, you know, endeavors. There are artists out there that I've seen do sculptures, and they do, I guess, installation pieces, where they use decommissioned weapons, guns specifically that have been drilled out. Like, somebody's taken a drill to the internal mechanism, so the hammer can no longer fire. You can't load bullets into it and hope to kill someone or anything with it. They're slated for destruction, but before they go to the scrap metal facility or get buried in a landfill or dropped in the Marianas Trench, whatever, somebody takes them, does something with them, and it's a legitimate piece of art. This, however, it's an invisible act. I mean, well, it's visible if you're there. Otherwise, sure. It's lost on you.
Right.
So I can't say it's a installation piece or a performance piece.
I would have to agree with that. And once again, really emphasizing that we're not saying it's a bad idea. We're just questioning whether or not you can legitimately call it an art installation piece, if not a community event or a community outreach program.
Yeah, I think, let me rephrase all that. I think you can call it a performance and an installation piece.
Oh, now you're backpedaling.
If you're there.
Okay.
Otherwise, if there's no video footage of it or anything, or photographs taken of it, how the hell is somebody 500 miles away gonna...
Well, I'm sure they're documenting it. I'm sure they got... I mean, I'm not there, so I can't say, but I'm sure somebody's running around with a video camera documenting it. I'm sure there'll be photographers there taking photos of the events, and will probably incorporate them into their own work.
Mm-hmm. I think the meaning and the effort behind it, though, is solid.
Well, would you consider something like SparkCon an art installation, where you can get you could get townships to come out to a live art demonstrations and, you know, sidewalk chalk, and have a 4-day event or 3 or 4 day event, you know, where you get everyone in the town to celebrate the arts? Is that not considered an art installation?
I would say it's not by definition an art installation. I would say it's more of an art institution, because it's a location. It has a set period of time and date that it's going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
You have a target market that you're having coming in. All the goings on, the performances, the workshops, all that stuff is predetermined. It's published beforehand, like, so people know what they're getting into before they go there. So I would say that's an institution and not an installation.
I'm not going to disagree. I would say it's a community outreach event.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of different words for it.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But an art installation, I mean, that has...
I guess if anything, I was just trying to understand, and you know, unfortunately, we don't have anyone involved here to interview, but just understand, like, what would make this program, this event occurring on Saturday, what would make that, in their estimation, an art installation, where, like, something like SparkCon, no one says that's an art installation.
Yeah. There's...
What would have been their logic? Unfortunately, like I said, no one's here to defend why they would call it that.
Let's okay. Off the top of your head, because I I did this, you know, silently in my subconscious, but off the top of your head, how would you make this a better situation? How would you make this an art installation? By your terms.
By my terms, it would be more like what we were discussing with once the guns were received, they were incorporated into a product, statue, monuments, installation. There was a reason people were bringing the guns in the sake of the name of art. So everybody in the community with a weapon was contributing to a physical piece that would stand for the community. So everyone would be part of the art. That's how I would say this would be an installation. And beyond that, it would be an art experiment. It would be a community piece. It would be a social piece. And you would have something that could even, you know, transcend New Orleans and go on tour and maybe inspire other areas of the U.S. that have similar gun issues to create their own beautiful piece of art out of the weapons from their streets.
I agree. Yeah, that would be a wonderful solution. It would be easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a solid decision. Mm-hmm. Like, the merits of doing this are obvious. But there's got to be something more to it. Like, because it is not going to appeal to a wider audience otherwise.
Right.
Like, I just right off the top of my head, I thought, you know, the guns could be, most guns are steel. They could be welded together into the shape of
a bigger gun.
A bigger gun or something that symbolizes, you know, peace or nonviolence, like a dove,
mm-hmm.
you know, for lack of a better
idea. Well, you're on the spot, I mean.
I mean, depending on how many guns you have, you could, you know, make a much more intricate piece. Or you could take a written catalog of these people's, the people that are donating the weapons, or surrendering the weapons, I'll say. Ask them, you know, why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what in your life have you experienced that would make you want to get rid of this? You know, take a list of stories from them, publish them, take a photo of the person, take a photo of their gun in the person. You know, there's so many different ways to make the individual gun transfer more personal as well as interesting to an outside audience.
Right.
Than just talking about it and saying it's a performance piece. So.
I agree with that.
You hear that, Kershaw Cashel?
Hey, man, this could be an annual thing, and every year they get it a little bit better, a little tighter, and, you know.
Yeah, it could be.
They're doing good work out there, and support them, regardless of, you know, whether or not they want to call it an art installation or whatever.
I know two things I'm going to look up from this this news coverage.
How to pronounce her name?
I'm going to look her up on Facebook.
Stalker.
Yeah, and
she's gonna need that gun to keep you away.
With a name like that, she's gotta be hot. I'm gonna look up, I'm gonna find her on Facebook and see what her story is. Then I'm also gonna look up the Tasmania Museum of Old and New Art, because I've heard of that before, and it has some sort of ties to the word and the place Tasmania. But I can't remember what it is. And I know it's, you know, in New Orleans, which has all sorts of crazy cultural ties to other countries.
Right on.
Yeah.
Do your research.
Do your research.
Speaking of research, you have done some research this week, didn't you?
I have done some research, but not enough for me to, like, have notes on the subject. It's actually, you know, simple enough to talk about.
Yeah.
It's another dinosaur story. The last one we talked about.
You know, you need a title for this, because this is the second or third dinosaur segment you're presenting?
Second.
Second?
Yeah. It is the third, because we talked about the fucker that stole the dinosaur from the museum.
That's right, museum. So, like, is this replacing Spider-Fax? Is this going to be a new thing?
It's a temporary substitute for Spider-Fax.
Maybe Spider-Fax will come back in the new year.
Maybe. Maybe it'll be a New Year's resolution to only talk about spiders ever again.
What are we going to call this segment?
I don't know. You name it.
Digressing with dinosaurs.
way to devalue it. I don't know. You have a note there that says talking with dinosaurs.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be a play on walking with dinosaurs, but yeah. We're not actually talking to the dinosaurs, so I don't know if talking with dinosaurs would work.
Well, the listeners don't know that, so talking with dinosaurs it is.
Ooh, we should get Dino on this podcast.
Please, no. So last time we talked about dinosaurs, we were talking about this massive beast that was like, it was 62 tons or something. It was called Dreadnoughtus. It was a giant sauropod, I think is the name for the brachiosaur-style dinosaurs. The long necks, the long tails, and they're designed to basically eat the tops of trees. And that one was found in Argentina, and it was like a record-setting size mammal.
Right.
It's like the biggest thing to ever walk the earth so far. But this time, we're talking about Deinocheirus, which is a really strange dinosaur. The article that I found was from BBC News, and it's titled Mystery of Dinosaur with Giant Arms Solved. Supposedly, this has been a mystery for paleontologists and scientists for 50 years. In the 1960s, some researchers found two skeletal arms. Just the arms. And they were 8 feet long, and at the ends of it, there were three massive claws. And they thought, you know, in the 1960s, you know, they were still... Paleontology was still relatively in its infancy. I mean, that was over half a century ago.
Yeah.
Paleontology was really only starting to be done in a professional sense. I'm going to guess 2 or 3 decades before the 1960s, maybe in the 30s, maybe in the 40s. Otherwise, they were just digging up shit and guessing at what what it made. But there's such an...
Hey, Hank, what do you think this is?
You, I don't know.
It looks like a collarbone to me.
It looks scary as hell. Let's call it Terrible Lizard. But yeah, that was the rationale that they had in the 1960s, was that these 2 8-foot-long arms with these massive claws at the ends of them, they belonged to some ferocious predator, like in the realm of T-Rex or something, but it had the capability of grabbing you and, like, you know, ripping you in half and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. However, the rest of the dinosaur's body has been found now. Not the same one, but they found 2 extremely well-preserved specimens of this dinosaur. They matched up the bones from the arms that they found in the 60s. They say that it's more bizarre than they ever could have guessed, because it was huge, it had a beak, it had a humped back and a giant set of hoofed feet, and then it had these 2, you know, massive arms. And there's several artist renditions of this dinosaur.
It looked like these arms looked like they had the forearms of Popeye.
Yeah, this fucker looks swole.
He looks thug.
He looks like he goes to the gym and does both arm and leg day, and only that.
It was the artist pose that they put him in. He just looked like he was about to throw down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the picture right now, and it looks like he's flexing.
You'd almost imagine like some old English like tattoo up his like forearm with his like last name or something in it.
Yeah, I could see him wearing a Speedo up on stage, like covered in mineral oil, like posing.
He's like, they should call him the Jersey Saurus.
Yes.
Jersey Shoresaurus.
Jersey Shoresaurus.
Jersey Shoresaurus.
Oh man.
Title of this episode.
I would think more into that and come up with like a legitimate joke on one of those characters from that show, but I don't want to waste my brain. So yeah, it's a really strange dinosaur that they found. It's really weird looking. It has these enormous forearms. I found somewhere in the article that the name for the arms originally, Dinochirus morificus originally meant unusual, horrible hands.
Initially,
the discovery of those arms really scared the hell out of some people. But they really think that this dinosaur was a slow mover. They think its primary diet would have been fish and plant life, because it was found in not brackish, but swampy areas, bogs and stuff. And they think it would have just lumbered along all day eating, you know, fish out of ponds and lakes.
You still sound like you're describing someone from the Jersey Shore.
I'm sure it's that DJ guy. Was it Pauly D? Is that his name?
The Situation, that guy?
Maybe the D stands for Dinochirus.
Ooh! I think we're on to something.
But yeah, they think it was, you know, relatively harmless. It was an omnivore because of the teeth and the claws. They know it had to be able to defend itself with these things. But for all intents and purposes, it looks like it would dig and gather herbaceous plants in a freshwater habitat.
Yeah, so it's kind of a blue-collar dinosaur.
Yeah.
It hangs out in the mud.
Yeah.
Kind of gets dirty, rolls up his giant sleeves, like, I'm going to go bring in some fish from my baby mama.
Yeah.
And starts digging away.
One of the paleontologists that was interviewed on this, he said, I think it was Professor John Hutchison from the UK's Royal Veterinary College. He said, now we know, and it's just so freaking weird, we would never have expected this animal to look so bizarre. It's really shocking to see how many weird features it has. It changes our view of what kind of forms dinosaurs can even take. So, to put everything in perspective, evolution is real, the Earth is not 2,000 years old, and they're still discovering weird-ass mammals that used to walk the Earth that nobody would have even imagined existed.
Well, that wouldn't have been a mammal.
Huh?
You just said discovering mammals.
It was a mammal.
It was a dinosaur.
It was a mammal.
It was warm-blooded?
Yeah. Not all dinosaurs were.
Why did you not lead with that? Why are you going to bury the lead like that?
Sorry, not all dinosaurs were cold-blooded. But Rick James was. Cold-blooded! Anyway. Somebody's
when
laughing.
You're as cold as ice! I hate Foreigner.
You hate Foreigner?
I really hate Foreigner.
I do too. What is that song, Double Vision?
Got double vision! They're like a second-rate Steve Miller band.
Yeah.
Like a fourth-rate Journey.
Yeah, I remember that show Aqua Teen Hunger Force. They had an episode where Carl, the crappy, hairy...
Who looked like that dinosaur?
Yeah, kind of does. Except with a massive gut. He had some belt that he called like the Foreigner belt, and it had like a... either a guitar or a cassette on for the belt buckle.
Right.
And you would like interact with it and it would play the song Double Vision or some other Foreigner track and it would like make women swoon or something. It was really
That sounds
freaky.
Awful.
Yeah, it was. That shit was freaking weird.
If you're a Foreigner fan, let us know. We want to hear from you. Something tells me no one's going to write in because Foreigner sucks.
If you're an Aqua Teen Hunger Force fan, that was tough to say, Aqua Teen Hunger Force fan, consider this. Think about what Frylock looks like and then compare it to Kanye West's face.
Hmm. But he likes fish sticks.
Yes, he does love fish sticks. He loves the hell out of some fish sticks. Well, that's all I've got.
Hey, dude. I could just talk more about how much I hate Foreigner.
Mm.
But I think I pretty much wrapped that up. I don't know if I can really go in that much without any more details on why they suck.
I'm trying to think of what band. Oh, Coldplay. What the fuck is happening with Coldplay?
In what regards?
They are garbage now.
Were they ever good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
2004, 2005.
Yellow? I fucking hated Yellow. That music video sucked. The song was boring as shit. The music video was boring. He walked on the beach. The sun came up behind him.
There's a lot more end. To it.
That's it.
You know what? And it was all yellow.
No, Coldplay. It's like I love Radiohead, mm-hmm. but the dude from Coldplay said like this band would not exist if not for Radiohead, and I'm like, God, I love Radiohead, but if they didn't exist, I wouldn't have Coldplay. So maybe my life would be better.
No. Look at the stars, Adam. Look how they shine for you.
We did have a write-in, a music write-in. Apparently, someone's concerned on Twitter and wants us to chime in on why apparently Slipknot's new album sounds like POD. I don't know why they wrote this in.
Are they bringing back the new metal? The rap rock?
Maybe. Maybe.
I thought Slipknot was dead.
I know. Apparently they have a new album out, and I want to say a couple of the band members are gone because they, like, their identities were revealed, which is weird because lead singer Corey Feldman, I don't know, whatever his name is.
It's not Corey Feldman.
He's got that other band where he takes his mask off.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's more about Slipknot than I ever really want to talk about.
Same here, but I could have sworn that they were done and over with. Like half of them died or something.
Possibly. I know the rap rock thing was pretty big in the early 2000s, kind of mid 2000s range. There was a local, they were local to Virginia band that I had a girlfriend at the time in high school. She was in love with this band, and I guess she had grown up in Virginia as well. And had known them to some kind of personal level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm dating her and whatnot. We worked at the same establishment. And, you know, every now and then she'd put in their album. And it was fucking garbage. their most well-known song was featured in a commercial for Pepsi. Not only was it Pepsi, but it was fucking Pepsi Blue.
Yeah.
And it was this song that goes, first you say, whoa, then you say, yeah, nah, fucking drink Pepsi Blue. I don't know what it was, but another track on the album, I kid you not, they had another track on the album that went, first you say mother, then we say fucker, motherfucker. And I'm just like, this is the same fucking song from the Pepsi Blue thing, only with, like, unnecessary profanity. What is the appeal?
The profanity is the only thing that made that shit good.
As far as I know. Well, interesting postscript. As far as I know, she broke up with me so that she could pursue a new relationship with the guitarist of that band and may or may not be married to him today. I know she's married. It could be to that guy.
Motherfucker. I listened to...
So POD sucks. That band sucks. Slipknot sucks. Foreigner sucks.
Actually, I'll say this.
Oh, and Coldplay.
I did watch a live performance that POD did one time.
Yeah.
And it was impressive.
Was it?
Their music is garbage.
Sure.
But the performance was good.
Hmm.
I cannot stand the whole new metal rap rock shit that was going on back then. I mean, I definitely liked music that was very close to it. It skirted on the outside of just, you know, breaking into that.
Would you consider 311?
Yes.
311 had their songs.
I liked a handful of their songs.
Yeah, they had songs.
And once again, they did, you know, wonderful stuff live.
Sure.
I mean, there's, what, probably four DVDs of their live performances out there.
That's a bit excessive.
There's a live album, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as short-lived as POD was, they were okay, I think. I would never buy one of their albums, ever, but...
That song, it bugged me. Youth of a Generation.
Youth of the Nation.
We are.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Youth of the Nation. I thought about it. I'm like, isn't anyone under the age of 18 the youth of a nation?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just posing it out there. I don't know.
They're attributing that typical American mentality where we are the only nation. Strange, funny story.
You have a POD story?
When I was in high school, I was taking Latin, and one of the tasks that they gave us to learn Latin was to translate that song "Youth of the Nation" into Latin and then sing it. And I remember like three lines of it, but my girlfriend Sarah knows probably the entire thing.
I don't think you want to out her about that, man.
I'm not going to bring her up here to sing it, but it was pretty funny at the time.
She could deny.
She could. I listened to an album recently that I haven't listened to in probably 12 years. It was an album by a band that often gets grouped into all this new metal and rap rock shit, but they weren't. And it's Deftones.
No, I wouldn't. I see what you mean by that, and their look was that of a POD or Linkin Park-ish. Yeah. They were just very whiny.
They were screamy. Well, that lead singer, Chino,
yeah.
He fucking, there's so many times I wonder, like, if his ass isn't just a constant hemorrhoid from how much he screams. But,
Well, we were talking about Incubus, co-worker and I this week. Because I guess Brandon Boyd was on Mark Maron? Or one of the other interview-style podcasts. And that actually got me thinking about you, because you really were a big fan of Fungus and Fungus Among Us and Science, which I always thought was very Deftones-esque. And they were kind of emulating that sound that was popular at that point. But it wasn't until Make Yourself that they really started developing their own sound. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's when Incubus started becoming like one of the best bands from the late 90s.
Yeah, I would say they all kind of had a similar sound, not only due to the technology at the time, but the promotion, what was popular, what was being sold.
Ozfest,
Lollapalooza.
Family Values Tour.
Yeah. System of a Down as well. All these bands went on tour together.
Yeah.
Like, I was too young to... I don't know. Was I too young? No, this was...
See, during that
mid
time
to late 90s, so yeah, I think it was.
All my friends would have gone to, like, Ozfest and the Family Values Tour to see those bands.
Yeah.
I was going to Warped Tour to see, like, MXPX, NOFX, Pennywise. Like, even though I hung out with those kids, I didn't listen to that music exclusively by any means. They did.
Mm-hmm.
But I was more into, like, the pop punk or, like, the, you know, Ramones, Sex Pistols, things like that. So my music tastes were never really in line with the popular, you know, alternative stuff of the late 90s.
Yeah. I mean, I've met some people that went to the Family Values Tour, and they said that it was impossible to enjoy because there were so many people there.
They were chaotic.
Yeah, there was such an amount of violence, just instant violence everywhere. Everything was overpriced. Once again, it was, you know, people charging an arm and a leg for a fucking bottle of water.
Oh, you remember, what was it, 1999's Woodstock?
Uh-huh.
And all the blown out of proportion riots. I did know someone who went there, and they were, I guess, texting when texting was still in its infancy. And they were like, it's really not that bad. They're blowing it out of proportion.
Yeah.
You know.
But, I mean...
But, yes, water did cost, like, $10.
If you're able, look up on YouTube, I'm sure the whole performance, the whole damn concert's probably on YouTube. Family Values Tour 99, 98, 97 as well. Just watch a couple of the performances and look at how violent the audience is. Like, the mosh pit is the entire front 500 feet of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody else is just, you know, slowly stepping back away from all the insanity. But what I was going to say about Deftones was they're often grouped into this nu metal rap rock scene, but in actuality, their career flip-flopped. They started out with a really unique sound, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was very angry, extremely angry music. Their second album, called Around the Fur, is the album that I'm talking about. I forgot how much I love that album. there's so much screaming on it, but the music is really good. It's strange at the same time because there's some songs where the chorus is just one word and the rest of the verses are just, you know, inaudible gurgling sounds coming out of the microphone.
That's how I remember Deftones, yes.
But that was their thing, though, was they turned the microphone into a different type of instrument. Like, right. He didn't actually sing into it all the time. He just made...
Well, see, but Tom York does that, too, but his is definitely whining.
He's actually...
He whines in a very melodic fashion.
I read one time where it was one of the Radiohead albums that came out was... actually just an accident. They hit record and...
Oh, your King's a Limb?
And, yeah. And it was actually just Tom York had eaten some bad Chipotle and he was moaning into the microphone from bowel troubles. And then, one of the other guys had, what was it? He was, like, incapable of picking up his drumsticks, so he kept dropping them all over the... all over the kit. I don't know, it was funny.
In fairness, that album was, like, recorded as they played it in an open room.
Yeah.
And it was, like, one take. Every track was one take. Yeah. There was actually a video, I think it was called Radiohead in the Basement or something like that.
Yeah.
And they show the whole recording session of King of Limb, and everything was just, like, as they were playing it, it was getting made.
Yeah.
It was really inspiring. But without seeing that, yes, that's exactly a fair representation of what that album sounds like.
Yeah, I need to find that post again because it was fucking hilarious. They went from every single band member and described how they were accidentally performing. And it was the whole thing was being recorded because the producer was like eating a sandwich or something in the recording room and he happens to look up and sees everybody at their instruments and he's like, oh shit, oh shit. So he presses record and then the album was cut.
We should do a whole episode about music and, you know, what we listen to while we're arting.
Yeah, we should.
And such.
We should totally talk about how music influences, you know, artistic passion. But
or maybe we could get some musical guests on there.
We could.
On the pod, and they could talk about, you know, music as an art and whatnot. If you're a local musician and you want to come on the show and talk it up, reach out to us and maybe we can make it happen.
Indeed. But yeah, Deftones, their career flip-flopped. They started out with...
You still on this Deftones?
Now? Yeah, it's a
you're really thinking about it.
I'm now. Incapable of finishing the Deftones idea. So they started out with this really unique sound. It was very angry music. It then branched into the nu metal, like, rap rock shit, while the nu metal rap rock genre died out.
Right.
So their career essentially took a fucking nosedive, and then, like, I think the bassist got killed in a car accident.
What?
One of the other people found Jesus.
Fieldy? No, yeah. You're thinking Korn.
No.
Fieldy was in Korn, and then Monkey found Jesus.
Dude, I think it happened with Deftones, too. They were just under the radar.
Well, they all hung out together. They all collectively found Jesus and...
And Tino stopped doing cocaine and he got fat.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I just realized Deftones is tone deaf. Just the two words switched.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized that. It's been like, what, 15 years?
Yep. Also, deaf used to mean like cool.
Deaf. Most deaf.
Yep. Most deaf is most cool.
Indeed. I think that's going to wrap it up for this week. Is it going to wrap it up? Do you have more about the Deftones you failed to mention?
No, I just want to say I did it all for the Nookie, so you can take that cookie.
Come on! Yeah!
I'm never going to...
Stick it up yeah! She put my tender hot in a blender and still less surrendered. Eve6 got something like some kind of percentage of the proceeds from Nookie because of the one simple "she put my tender heart in a blender" line. I always love that. I hope that's true. I heard that.
I guess I never thought about that.
Yeah, no, I heard that they got a cut of the money made off that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what fast food chain Fred Durst is working for these days.
I don't know. I hear West Portland's still doing stuff. Nobody asked him to, but he's still doing it.
I forgot what
the
hell he was doing.
Mushroom Head?
Yeah, I don't remember. I know he's still an asshole, though.
No, Fred's the asshole. Wes Borland's pretty cool. He was on an episode of Oddities.
I heard he was a douchebag.
He may be, but he was on the episode of Oddities.
I haven't seen that season yet. It's not available.
You know what is available? Time travel. It's a bitch. What?
The next album will be better.